Hello and welcome to this Nutmeg podcast, a version of the Scottish football magazine for your ears. I'm Daniel Gray and this is My Favourite Year, an occasional series in which interesting figures talk about their most cherished football season. This time, BBC Scotland broadcaster Richard Gordon joins me to look back at Aberdeen's wonderful 1982-83 campaign. This is an online recording given current restrictions, but hopefully it isn't too far away from the usual quality. The Nutmeg podcast is sponsored by Orium, Scotland's sports performance centre. We perch on the elegant shoulders of our print offering. Please see nutmegmagazine.co.uk and also check out our Lost Weekends feature here for your distraction in this time without live football. Enough of that. Here's the podcast. Cue tape. Okay, Richard, take us back to Aberdeen in the summer of 1982. Come on, Eileen, top of the charts. What was the city like at that time?
Yeah, I mean, I think back then there was just a great deal of excitement, and a lot of it was determined by the football team. With Alex Ferguson having come in, given us a taste of what it was to come by winning the league title in 1980. I mean, I remember that summer. The summers back then seemed to stretch on forever. And it was just the excitement of football actually coming back. I mean, it wasn't until, well, it was well into August, or certainly into August, before the competitive football started as it was, well, as it is these days with the group stages of the League Cup. But I mean, I think it was a pretty vibrant place. Obviously, the oil industry was booming back then. I think there was a degree of jealousy towards Aberdeen from other Scottish cities that we were in a very good place financially, and businesses were thriving. I just remember it as being a pretty happy, positive kind of time back then.
And what about you personally? Were you living in the city? What were you doing? Studying? Working?
I was working in the Clydesdale Bank. I had left school or got towards the end of school with no great path that I was determined to follow. They came around and did, I think, what they call the milk round. You know, the various employers came to the schools, and there was a chap there from the Clydesdale Bank back in, I guess that would have been springtime of 77. He said, "Does anyone want an interview with a bank?" And I stuck my hand up. So 5 years down the line, I was working in the bank, also working part-time in a pub called the Bob and Mill on King Street, a couple of nights a week. And, you know, as a young man, very early 20s, enjoying my social life, and in particular enjoying the football. I mean, I played football on Sundays, midweeks. I went to watch Aberdeen home and away on Saturdays and played a bit of golf. And that was pretty much how life was for a few years then. It was great. It seems incredible to think it's so long ago, but it was a lovely time. We'd tee off as early as we could on a Saturday, and then at the King's Links, which is literally just across the road from Pittodrie. If the Dons were at home, we'd have a couple of pints, we'd have our lunch, and we'd go across to watch the games. I mean, it was great. No responsibilities, just sheer enjoyment.
Bliss in that dawn, was it, to be alive?
Yeah, I mean, it was. And of course, so fortunate to be at that stage when the Dons were about to, or were the early stages, I guess, then, of what was to be the most glorious 6 or 7 years in the club's history. I mean, it was an astonishing time. I think inevitably we all took it for granted a bit, but I do remember one or two of the big games, people saying, "Ah, I'm not going to go, I'll go next year." But I do remember always trying to go to all those. So maybe a part of me realised that, you know, for 75 years up to then, it hadn't been like this, and the likelihood it was that it wasn't going to carry on being exactly like this. I didn't see the fallow years just being quite as fallow as they were, I must admit, in the aftermath. But no, it was a brilliant time. And yeah, I love my football. And we had, at that stage, well, the best group of players that we've ever had in the club's history. So, I mean, it was great.
So in that summer, presumably the mood was high on the back of the Scottish Cup win the previous season. Did future success feel inevitable?
Yeah, I mean, I think it absolutely did. I'd be lying if I imagined us playing Real Madrid in a European final and beating them. But there had been signs that Alex Ferguson as he was then, he was getting to grips. The players were getting to grips with Europe. There'd been one or two disappointments, but I think the signs were there. And he by this stage, he'd all but put that team together. So the components, he was very clever in terms of one or two of the players that he brought in. Certainly players who'd been there for a number of years. He got so much more out of them, guys like John McMaster, Doug Rugby, who became major parts of that side. So, there was a real sense, certainly domestically, that, at the time it was Dundee United were seen as the main rivals, although Celtic clearly were very strong. Rangers really weren't figuring at that point. I think going into that season, we knew the likelihood was that it was going to be very tight between Celtic, Dundee United and Aberdeen, and that was exactly how it turned out.
Which feels unimaginable now, especially I've lived up here for 16 years now and I've never really seen a title challenge from outside of Glasgow, so it must have been fantastic all round, I think.
Well, absolutely, and it's obviously 2 points for a win back then. There were some, you go back to the 79-80 season where the Dons clawed back quite a disadvantage that they had going into the closing months, but went and won twice at Celtic Park in the space of 10 days, and that opened things up then. So every season, I think that if you look at the papers on the first day of the season and all the pundits are tipping who's going to win the league, nowadays pretty much everyone would just simply jot down Celtic, whereas back then you would see it. You would see it on that Saturday morning as the league season was kicking off. It would be split right across, generally, then, Celtic, Aberdeen and Dundee United. And, yeah. It was incredible. And how that, the league season, turned out that in 82-83 with, 1 point separating the three clubs right at the end. I mean, you're right. It's totally, totally unimaginable now.
So into that league season, then, the nitty-gritty, as it were, a slow start, indeed, with defeat to Dundee United, then a 4-1 victory over Morton, and then the highlights just kept coming, didn't they? A 3-1 win at Celtic, 5-1 win against Dundee United. What football you must have seen.
Yeah, there was never a game that we went into that you didn't think Aberdeen were going to win. You're right, it was a slow start. I remember that. And United were, I keep going back to United at the time, but they'd beaten us right at the start. They knocked us out of the League Cup, winning home and away. And they were getting up a bit of a head of steam at that stage. But yeah, Aberdeen, look, I think if you look back, I think I'm right in saying they lost 6 games over the course of the season. 2 of them came in the first few weeks. And with only 2 points or a win, you can't say that was it. But they gave themselves a bit of a hurdle to climb. And Jim McLean and United were just so consistent that season. They just kept getting the wins. I remember lots of Saturdays, this obviously way before mobile phones and the like. So you would be at the Dons game and then the first thing you try to do is get to a radio or get the Green Final, or if we were away from home, one of the sports pages in Perth or wherever we were, just to find out how United and Celtic had got on. And week in, week out, it just felt like United just kept on winning. I mean, in the midst of all that, it was a sensational game. When we beat United 5-1, Dougie Rugby got a couple of goals that day. And I always remember it was the Sports Scene highlights match that Saturday night. And it was the Merseyside derby that weekend as well. And I think Liverpool won 5-0 against Everton. I just remember sitting watching the two games back to back. This is just brilliant. Just brilliant.
A number of 5-goal games that season. We'll come, of course, to the Cup Winners' Cup semi-final later, but to beat Motherwell 5-0, as mentioned, Dundee United, 2 5-0 wins at the end of the season as well. This team was just full of goals, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was such a shame, actually, because just before those, the back-to-back 5-0 wins, because they moved the Killy game to the Thursday night to give them a little bit extra to prepare for Gothenburg. We beat Hibs 5-0 on the final Saturday, but prior to that, there'd been a 0-0 draw at Easter Road, and I remember then thinking that was probably, you didn't see United or Celtic slipping up in the last couple of games. So I think going into that, there was a bit of a kind of carefree attitude. And of course, the 2 5-0 wins were either side of Gothenburg and with the Scottish Cup final to come. So, I mean, it was a hell of a conclusion to the campaign. But yeah, Gordon Strachan, for a couple of years then, I mean, he was brilliant throughout, but for a couple of years, he was a machine. I mean, he scored more than 20 goals from essentially a right-sided midfielder. He was never a winger as such. He had a bit of a roving commission, but he was getting the goals. Mark McGee was scoring goals. He was just a beast up front. And then, of course, John Hewitt, generally coming on from the bench, he would get a goal. Eric Black was absolutely flying back then. Peter Weir supplying from the left side. I'd still love to this day. I'll go back and I'll watch videos, watch clips online, just to remind myself, you know, just how good they were. When I wrote the Gothenburg book, I did a lot of online research, and I just came away shaking my head, thinking, I don't think I appreciated just what I was watching back then, because you saw it most weeks.
What about Pittodrie then? Can you describe what the ground looked like and what was it like on those occasions when 24,000 people were crammed in?
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing to think. I mean, I was at plenty of games during that time where there might have been 7,000 or 8,000. It wasn't the kind of season ticket mentality that there is these days that all clubs strive for. So for a home game against Morton, Motherwell, these kind of teams at the time, you might only get 8,000 or 9,000. But the big nights, the games against Rangers and Celtic, the games towards the end of the season, the European nights. I know there's this reputation that Pittodrie had. You know, I remember Gordon Strachan and Alex Ferguson talking about it, you know, hearing the sweetie papers rustling in the main stand. you know, there were days, there were occasions when it was like that, but there were so many nights, so many afternoons with the stadium absolutely buzzing. I tended to, the group of friends I went with at the time, we would choose a different part of the stadium. Initially we were in the beach end, which now the Richard Donnell stand. We'd be in the beach end there because that's where the main group of fans congregated. But then we had a season in, and I can't remember what section it was, but there was a little side stand that sat between the beach end and the main stand. And we had a season watching games from there. But once the South Stand had been opened up, which it had been a couple of years there properly with a cantilever roof, we kind of settled on the South Stand and generally round about the halfway line. And I can remember so many occasions when that place was just raucous. We just got swept away by the brand of football, by the wins, by the goals. And as we got nearer and nearer to that unimaginable success.
The cup run then began in goals again, 4-1 against Hibs, and just snowballed from there, I guess. You were competing on three fronts. Was there a sense that something had to give?
I guess you're greedy, aren't you? As a football fan, as a player, as a manager, you want it all. The sequence that they put together, there were a couple of defeats in maybe April time. Certainly, there were a couple that we did get to the point where you felt that if anything was going to go, it possibly was going to be the league. Because as I mentioned earlier, United were so consistent. We were a very good, by this stage, having tasted defeats in a couple of cup finals, a couple of semi-finals, we were a team that knew how to win cup ties. So I guess probably the Scottish Cup, I mean, yeah, absolutely, because it was the Scottish Cup way back in 1970. I was at the semi, not the final, but that was what sparked my love for the club initially. And I was always desperate to see us win the Scottish Cup. So when we won it in 82, incredible game after extra time against Rangers. And that set us up, of course, for the Cup Winners' Cup. So desperate to see us win the Scottish Cup again. And of course, the further we went in Europe, you began to dream that there might be European Cup success as well.
Do you think that was part of Alex Ferguson's genius throughout his managerial career, the ability to manage different competitions like that?
I think at that stage, certainly with that team, I mean, he had a group of players there who shared his incredible determination, will to win, self-belief. You know, I've spoken to all these guys many, many times. And while they all say that it wouldn't have happened without Sir Alex Ferguson, I think he would admit that he was, well, fortunate to an extent. I mean, he's the one who put them all together, but he was fortunate that he had that group of players. Stuart Kennedy in particular was such a driving force in that dressing room. He, you know, if anyone was down, if anyone was beginning to let it slip at all, God, I mean, they were right on top of them. So there was the mentality, there was the skill that they had, but there was also this belief. If they scored first, they were going to win that game. That was the belief they had. And even if they went behind, that's okay, we'll come back. You know, they never felt they were beaten. They never let it slip away. So they had that. But yeah, I mean, he had that, and he didn't really make too many changes. You know, it wasn't like it is nowadays where you're seeing four or five changes every week. More often than not, he would be putting out pretty much the same 11 players. It might be a change or two. Obviously, injuries and suspension played their part, but he didn't change for change's sake.
In this cup then, zip forward to the semi-final against Celtic. What are your memories of that game?
It's funny. The one memory that always comes back to me on that one is Peter Weir scored with a header to win the tie 1-0. And then, so it would have been, well, almost a decade later, I was doing a radio documentary looking back on Gothenburg 10 years on. And Peter was one player that I didn't know at that stage, but I managed to track him down, went to interview him. And bizarrely, at that point, he owned a newsagent's shop about 150 yards away from the goal in which he scored the winner in the semi-final. And there was this kind of bizarre scenario of standing in the small room at the back of his wee shop, knowing that just over my right shoulder, some 150 yards, there was that goal that, you know, 9 years previously, or whatever, 10 years previously, that I had been cheering, watching him score. It was no surprise to go and beat Celtic or Rangers in Glasgow back then, because, and that was the big thing. That was the big thing. You talked about Sir Alex Ferguson and the players. He always spoke about beating Celtic, beating Rangers. If you can go there against all the odds, of course, he had the whole thing about the West Coast bias and the media, everybody against him, no one wanted them to win. He worked that so it became ingrained in the players. So it was no surprise to, whereas now, if Aberdeen were to beat Celtic in a semi-final or final at Hampden, clearly a lot of people would see it as a surprise. Back then, no. It was what we did. And it was a tough, tough Celtic team. And it was a tough game, I remember. Very hard fought. But obviously, they came out on top. And the joy of that, of course, is you know that you've got that Scottish Cup final. That's where the season is going to round off. I didn't realise quite how it was all going to pan out in the last 10 or 12 days of the campaign. But yeah, it was, we went down to Glasgow, we won, we headed back up the road again, job done.
Who's particularly been spoken to, so is Peter Weir. Like a bit of a push by Aiken. He's still got in the cross there, Peter Weir! And Aberdeen have done it! The substitute breaks it in.
The Peter Weir story there, of him going to work in a newsagent after the game, hints that many of these were very normal footballers, as it were. Of course, Strachan, McGee and others went on to be managers, McLeish. But there's something in that, isn't there? There were Aberdonian lads in the squad as well, weren't there? Ferguson brought these players on.
Yeah. I mean, Neil Simpson was born down south, but is as northeast a loon as you could possibly find. Neil Cooper was born in India, but he moved back to Aberdeen moved to Aberdeen very early. John Hewitt was a local lad, and you had Brian Gunn and Eric Black, who were from up north. So it wasn't just the Central Belt. And to be honest, I mean, there was always this thing with Aberdeen that the local boys got it harder. You know, I remember David Robertson, the left back, when he first came into the team, he would get pelters from the Aberdeen fans. And I'm not quite sure where that mentality comes from, but I mean, you just simply couldn't criticize any of the guys who were part of that squad. Fans did, that's just the way that fans are, but when you think of what they achieved over such a long period of time, and it was that, it wasn't just the different mentalities from different parts of the country, but you had the different age groups as well. I mean, none of these guys were old, but by the time this team was at its peak, you had guys like Miller and McLeish and Kennedy, who would have been in their mid-20s. You had the kids coming through, the teenagers of Black and Cooper and Simpson and Hewitt. And they, you know, you talk to them now, God, what an education they got. Not just from Sir Alex, from Archie Knox, Teddy Scott, who was just everywhere, and played such a major role behind the scenes. But from those, I mean, that was an unforgiving dressing room that these kids stepped into. And they had to grow up very quickly. They did. And when you think back and you look at the trophies that these guys amassed, I mean, Eric Black worked out when I was doing the bit. Eric Black won a major trophy for every 19 games he played for the club. I mean, it's an astonishing, and he talks about it. He says, you know, we turned up for pre-season training. We got shouted at. We won a lot of games, and we got a couple of cups at the end of the campaign. You know, and that was just the mentality, and that's served them so well, of course, over those years.
What about the chairman, Dick Donald? I believe his business was in cinema. Is that right?
Yeah, the Donalds owned, gosh, they owned most of Aberdeen at one point. I think certainly it was entertainment. So they had the cinemas. I think they owned the ice rink at that stage as well. There was an ice rink in Spring Garden. Yeah, and look, I mean, Dick had been involved in the club for many, many years. I only got to know him briefly when working in local radio, but he was always Mr. Donald to me. He wasn't one for sitting down and having a chat and a laugh with, you know, as a young Cub reporter. But he had a very, very strong relationship. There was him and Chris Anderson, who sadly died a number of years ago, but Chris was a real driving force, and the two, from what I gather, were very different characters. You know, Chris was full of ideas and enthusiasm. Dick was a bit he knew the value of a shilling back then, and I think there were a few disagreements at times over the finances, and he would, you know, he got a lot of stick from the fans. Because they wanted him to splash the cash, I guess. But no, I mean, so again, Sir Alex, you know, if you look back through any of the quotes, he says that the relationship he had with the chairman was such a major part in everything he achieved. And of course, his son Ian Donald went on to succeed him as chairman, not just quite as successfully. But yeah, I mean, the Donald family played a major part during those years.
Moving then to that Cup Winners' Cup, take us back to the start of the run, the game against Sion. Was the excitement for European football from the start?
Yeah, I mean, it was incredibly early to be starting off. I'm saying that now. It doesn't seem it when you think of when the European football starts now. But bizarrely, we had been drawn in the preliminary round. So we were playing in the middle of August in the midst of the League Cup ties. And we scored early through Eric Black. And then it was just incredible to watch, because the League Cup campaign hadn't started great. There'd been a couple of draws, I think, just ahead of that tie against Sion. But that night, I mean, it was a beautiful night. I was sitting in the beach end. It wasn't by any means a massive crowd, but it was a reasonable turnout. But they were just absolutely superb. I mean, the goals just kept coming and coming and coming. I think there were six different scorers and an own goal from memory. But I do remember the general manager of Sion afterwards. There was a great quote that I picked up from the papers many years afterwards. And I can't remember his name now, Leon somebody. But he said, that team will go on and win the tournament. Mm. I thought, wow, what a statement to make on the back of 90 minutes. But no, I mean, they blew them away. They went out to Switzerland. They won 4-1 in the second leg. They think, well, that's us. At least we're in the competition proper at this stage. And they look, I mean, there were much tougher challenges in the next few rounds. But it was a brilliant start. And I just remember that night thinking, yo, what a season. What a season this could be. You know, if we're capable of doing that to in European competition, irrespective of who you're playing, it does suggest that there are happy times ahead.
And then a narrow win against Dynamo Tirana and an aggregate 3-0 win against Lech Poznan. One thing I loved about the Cup Winners' Cup and the UEFA Cup was that you would often be drawn against teams from behind the Iron Curtain. It seems almost exotic to me.
And to me as well. I mean, the thought that we were playing, first of all, a team from Albania, and I remember that night. I mean, it was John Hewitt got the goal, and it was a tough, tough night. And I must admit, you know, as fans, you're thinking, 1-0, going, as you say, behind the Iron Curtain. I remember talking to players subsequently, and they weren't bothered. They by this time they had that self belief. No, they had the leads. They played a very good defensive performance, from what I was told. Got the 0-0 draw and got through. But I mean, the guys were completely blown away. You know, to see armed guards everywhere, to see the poverty in Albania, it was quite an eye-opener, I think, for, you know, what was a group of young men. Poland, or Poznan, again, home in the first leg, 2-0, comfortable. That was comfortable that night, is my recollection. The away leg was an afternoon kickoff, and I remember... I was working in the bank at the time and had my old transistor radio with my little earpiece hidden up inside my jacket. And so as I was wandering around inside the bank listening, and it was Dougie Bell scored from, I think, about 3 inches out. I think it may have come off his nose even.
Poznan Aberdeen 0-1, anche qui l'Aberdeen che aveva vinto 2-0 all'andata, quindi si qualifica con Piero Diritto. Il gol, comunque l'Aberdeen passa con questo gol di Doug Bell, Aberdeen batte Lech Poznan 1-0, Aberdeen qualificato.
But I mean, they actually dealt very, very comfortably with what were two very tricky ties. So they've gone through against those two. And then, of course, you're waiting for the draw, which was, I think, my recollection is it was a few weeks after before the draw was actually made. And then, of course, you get Bayern Munich. And, I mean, for the next 3 months, irrespective of... And they went on a very good run, I think, in the league right the way through that, and started off the Scottish Cup campaign. But all anyone could think about was Bayern Munich. You know, as a kid, Ajax were the first continental team really I became aware of with the three European Cup wins. But Bayern came through just after that. And of course, I mean, back then it was Beckenbauer and Müller were the two, and Sepp Maier, the goalie. The squad had changed a bit by then. Rummenigge was there. But I mean, it was Augenthaler, I remember, being just an absolute monster at the heart of the Bayern Munich defence. Of course, he scored one of the goals at Pretoria. But no, I mean, the excitement leading up to that was palpable. And then we went to, just before the Bayern Munich ties, we went to Celtic Park, 1-3-1. Eric Black scored a hat-trick. And I think I'm right in saying he's still the last person to have scored a hat-trick against Celtic in the league at Celtic Park. So you're going back, you know, the guts of 40 years. But Bayern Munich were, and I remember they had spies in the stands. the typical pictures you see in the papers of the guy in the stand with his hat on, pulled down over his forehead. But they must have had their eyes opened. Because they, I mean, you know, Bayern Munich back then, they just expected to win everything, didn't they? And having watched that, I think that probably would have opened their eyes just a little bit.
It's that long wait from the second leg against Poznan in November all the way to March, the 0-0 away in Germany, and then that night, that 3-2, incredible.
Yeah, the 0-0, you know, Willie Miller says, for him, Jim Leighton definitely said it to me, that for him, that was their best performance in Europe. And if you look back at the footage, we had chances. I mean, we could have actually won that game, but Jim pulled off some brilliant saves. I mean, really, really good saves. Willie and Alec in the heart of the defence. I mean, it was just to go to the Olympic Stadium and get a 0-0 draw. And obviously, we are dreaming. We're absolutely dreaming. We think, well, we can beat anyone at Pittodrie. We go behind. Augenthaler gets the opener. Neil Simpson gets us back in level terms. And then Flugler hits one that Jim Leighton feels he should have saved it. But in it goes. Pittodrie was absolutely jumping that night, but obviously hopes are beginning to fade, and then 60 seconds of complete and utter madness. I was there with my pals that day. My dad was there, my old dad was there, and as the equaliser has gone in, here we go was the chant that was just kind of, that had become the favourite chant at the time. And I looked around, and my old man was standing up on the seats in the south stand with his hands above his head, singing, "Here we go, here we go." And I'd never seen my dad show the slightest bit of emotion in his life. And then, of course, seconds later, the long ball from McMaster. Black's header's clawed out by Müller, the Bayern Munich goalkeeper, and John Hewitt's. I mean, it's great actually talking to John about it, because it's a moment frozen in time. And he said to me, again, if you look back, you see, just as he's coming in, he said all he was concentrating on was making contact with the ball, and his foot actually slips. So, I mean, he was lucky he actually made contact, but he got enough on it to get it over the line. And I love also, if you look back at the footage, it's the reactions of individual players. Gordon Strachan is jumping about like a wee boy when it goes in. And then, of course, you know you've got 12, 13 minutes to hold on. And there was one moment when Rummenigge almost got away, and Willie just timed to perfection the tackle in the box, Willie Müller. And in the midst of it all, the excitement, even in the main stands, they were getting a bit hyper. One of the old fans in there, he had a brolly in his hand and it came flying out, landed in the pitch, and there was a bit of controversy about that, as to, you know, had he thrown it on the pitch? No, it was just it in the sheer elation. In that South Stand, I mean, I just remember people falling over seats, and everybody was, you know, I think I ended up about four rows away from where I'd started. It was mayhem. And then, you know, to get the win, the final whistle goes, and then the players kind of doing the lap of honour. And I love even some of the stills from that night. It's just the look. You know, I've talked a lot about their self-belief and the fact that they knew they could beat anyone. But you could tell by the looks in some of those faces that they realise that they've just done something very, very special.
It's already taken. The final whistle goes. Aberdeen have won perhaps their greatest victory ever. Alec Ferguson dancing a tick of delight in the track, and well he might. His team came back from the dead. Supporters now unfortunately on the pitch. But Aberdeen, tied up at one apiece at half-time, went behind to a great goal from Flugler, and then two goals in 60 seconds. The first from the head of Alec McLeish, and then the winner from John Hewitt, turned the match back to Aberdeen, and after a performance which will never be forgotten by the 24,000 people inside the stadium, Aberdeen go through to the semi-final.
On to the semi-final, an absolute dream first leg against Vatasai of Belgium.
It was funny, I don't know if we were late or if it was just that it was just such a busy, busy evening, but I remember going along, and actually the South Stand, by the time we got there, the South Stand was packed. So there's a little section between the South Stand and the Merkland Road Stand, which is not undercover, and it didn't matter, it was a beautiful evening, early April evening. So we were standing up at the top of that, and pretty much over the back of that, and this kind of grassy bank that just tumbles away. Anyway, we were at the end that the Dons were shooting in the first half. And of course, within 4 or 5 minutes, we're 2-0 up. Black and Simpson have scored. Doogie Bell was just sensational that night. I mean, he was a magnificent player who was so unlucky with injury, but by some measure, his best night in an Aberdeen shirt. But I do remember when the second goal went in, there was a guy behind me, he fell back and he tumbled down this hill. Of course, you're thinking, oh my God, oh my God. But he stands up and he's going, oh, come on, the Dons. He's after him, and he was feeling no pain. And then the goals just came. I remember they got one back, but then and Mark McGee eventually scrambles home the fifth, at about the fifth time of asking. It was one of the most ridiculous scrambles in the box you'll ever see. But yeah, 5-1. And I mentioned earlier, my boss in the bank, Ken, I went in the next morning and I said, I need my holidays to cover the 11th of May. Because that was it. We knew there's no way that team were throwing away that. So I said, I need to go to Gothenburg. So he gave him a holidays. Then I realised, of course, I had no money and I couldn't afford it. So he then gave me a personal loan for £400, which was to cover a carpet and a fridge. So for the next 2 years, every time that standing order came out to repay the personal loan, it was just normally you hate seeing money going out of your bank account, but each one was just a little reminder of Gothenburg. I mean, I tried to get on the ferry, the Sinclair, which most of my pals were on. It was all booked up right away. And I actually remember sitting in the bank in the wee assistant manager's room, constantly calling P&O, calling, trying to get my place. And then eventually I got through them and, no, I'm sorry, it's all booked up. And I'd never flown at that point. And I was scared of flying, petrified of flying. But I figured that if anything was going to get me up in the air, it was Aberdeen playing Real Madrid in a European final. So we flew. A group of us flew across. Okay, I mean, even now, it poured with rain the whole time. I remember we were walking through and thinking, I'm getting absolutely soaked here. Of course, in typical, wearing a pair of jeans and an Aberdeen top, getting absolutely soaked. So we went into this old-fashioned department store. It was about four floors, sold absolutely everything. You know, really, just the kind of things, you know, Mum used to take me to when I was a wee boy, to try to find some kind of waterproof gear, and got... I don't think I've got any photographs of this. Lovely to look back, but it was a waterproof suit, which wasn't quite Adidas because it was red, but it only had two stripes down the side of the leg and the arms. So I wore this waterproof suit for the 2 days that I was there. And it was madness. I mean, certainly there were a few beers the night before, and then the day of the game. I just always remember, you know, the kind of trek towards the stadium and it just getting busier and busier, and it was still chucking it down. There's a fountain outside the stadium. It seemed like half the fans were in the fountain. I mean, it was great. It was such a joyous time, more innocent times, I suppose, back then. But everybody was just having a laugh. There was no trouble. I mean, I don't think I saw a Real Madrid fan until I got inside the stadium, to be honest. And we vastly outnumbered them anyway. But it's incredible to think. I mean, these days, I don't think that game would have been played. I mean, the pitch, the condition of the pitch, the rain, you see the massive puddles all the way around the pitch. I don't know if it would have started, but I mean, and that never even crossed our minds, you know, into the stadium and you're singing the songs and watching the players coming out to do a wee warm-up. Sensational. Absolutely phenomenal.
And an early goal.
Yeah. I mean, Eric Black was, it was by no means his most spectacular goal, but it was one that they'd worked on the corner from Strachan, Big Alec with a header, which comes off the defender, and Eric Black just swivels and hooks it across the keeper into the corner of the net. And just that uproar. And it's funny, it wasn't until I went back, you know, a few years back and reviewed it, that I remember just how dominant we were. If we'd won that game 4-0, it wouldn't have been a surprise. We absolutely battered Real Madrid. But of course, having come close, we hit the bar prior to that. So a couple of other shots just wide. And then the conditions play their part. Alec McLeish with the pass back to Jim Leighton. Catches on the surface. Jim brings the Real Madrid player down. Penalty. These days he'd have been sent off because was whether the ref decided whether he was going for the ball or not. But it was a clear penalty. They stick it away. And of course, then you begin to, the fears begin to set in. But I thought the boys were fantastic. I mean, they dug in, should have won it in the 90 minutes. But of course, they go to extra time. I mean, Alex Ferguson had made the change. He'd brought on John Hewitt. He was threatening to bring John Hewitt back off again because John was just determined to get to the ball, and he was dropping deeper and dropping deeper. And you see Ferguson screaming at him to get up the pitch. And he said, he actually told him, he says, if you don't get up that effing pitch, you're coming back off, which would have been incredible. But yeah, and then into extra time. And then that moment, I mean, I talked about being frozen in time. When was it? A few years back, I was out covering a Celtic tie and just outside Gothenburg. And myself and actually Peter Houston, who was doing the commentary, Peter went with me. And we went, I got the bus into Gothenburg and went to the stadium. And there had been a concert there the night before. So the big gates at the end of the stadium were open. So the two of us just wandered down into the stadium. And I got some pictures of me replicating the various poses of standing where John Hewitt stood to head or dive to head the winner, or me standing at the side of the pitch holding the trophy up like Willie Miller. I mean, it just brought so many sensations and emotions back. You know, this was a beautiful sunny afternoon in an empty stadium, but I could hear the Aberdeen fans. I could feel the rain. I could feel the tension and the emotion that we all felt back then. God, I mean, when John dived in to score that winning goal, it was bedlam. And then, of course, there's just that moment right at the end with the free kick, twice taken free kick. And I mean, the guys talk about this, the forming the wall, and Peter Weir kind of offers up a silent prayer, offers up a praise. He just actually in the wall as the guy's just about to smash it towards goal. He said, "Please God, don't let them score. They don't deserve to score." if it misses that post by 2 inches, that's all it does. And the final whistle goes soon after. Astonishing. I mean, the whole thing, just astonishing to look back on. And just, you know, watching the players, watching what it meant to them, and knowing that this was just as, well, almost certainly as good as it was ever going to get as an Aberdeen fan.
That's a good ball from Peter Weir. Now Aberdeen with McGee making the break, and Hewitt waiting in the middle! Fantastic goal, and Hewitt has done it again, come on as a substitute. Let's hope that's a winner as well. Marvellous goal. Peter Weir started with the ball down the line, McGee took it on, over it came, and there was Hewitt at the back of this. The Aberdeen fans are going mad behind the scenes. Tremendous scenes.
That's the real Peter Weir, and that's the brilliant John Hewitt, and that's 2-1 to Aberdeen. And about 8 minutes now for them to concentrate and to survive.
What was it about Alex Ferguson that allowed him to do this? Was it tactics, character? I guess a combination.
Yeah, it was a combination. The players, they were in fear. I mean, they absolutely ruled by terror, he and Archie Knox. But all those players appreciated that they had better careers, they were better players. Some of the stories you just couldn't get off with them these days. And it's probably no bad thing that you couldn't get off with them these days, but they just accepted it back then. They knew, you know, I think it's a lot easier to accept what the manager's doing if you're winning games and you're winning trophies and you're getting win bonuses. And, you know, that meant a lot. I mean, the trophies obviously meant so much, but actually, I mean, Gordon Strachan, I remember Gordon saying that, and this is kind of relates back to what you said about these being ordinary guys. I mean, Gordon talks about the fact that the wives will be sitting at the Scottish Cup final in the stand, knowing that if Aberdeen win the Cup, they're going on holiday that summer. And if they don't, mm-hmm. they're staying at home. You know, that played its part. And also, you didn't want to ever let your standards drop, because if you dropped out of that team, and he was ruthless when he needed to be. I mean, he showed great compassion. If you think about the Cupner's Cup final, Stuart Kennedy, because of everything Stuart Kennedy had done, Stuart had no chance of playing. He went through, Fergie put him through a fitness test at Pittodrie not long before they left. And Stuart was, through gritted teeth, was trying to do the shuttle runs, trying to prove to the manager. And eventually, he said, but he was in agony, absolutely excruciating pain. But he was so determined to play. And the manager just walked up to him and put his arm around him and said, "Look, I'll put you on the bench. How's that?" He went, "Yeah, that'll do for me." Mm. So, you know, there was that side to him. And even the ones who latterly fell out with him, still, I don't think any of them would say anything other than, you know, he was a magnificent part of their careers and helped to make them what they became.
10 days later, the 21st of May, the Scottish Cup final at Hampden. You'd think a game too many. And yet...
Yeah, they won. I mean, it's gone down in history, of course, as the Cup final, where immediately afterwards, Alex Ferguson berates his team. You know, they didn't meet the standards that he expected of them. Miller and McLeish and Leighton won that cup today. The rest of them were hopeless. It beggars belief that Neil Cooper and Joe and Hugh, I remember talking to them about it, and Neil, I think, was about to open a bottle of champagne in the dressing room, and Archie Knox walked in, looked at him, went, "I wouldn't do that, son." I said, "Why?" He's just slaughtered the lot of you out there on the pitch in the flash interview. And he was absolutely raging. They were supposed to be going to, I think it was St Andrews they went to for a celebration. The wives weren't allowed to go with them, whether to make their own way. I mean, the whole thing was just absolutely crazy. He said the bus journey across was like a morgue. The players just couldn't believe what was going on. And ultimately he did within a few days, I think he apologized to them and admitted that, but it was just, it's an example of the standards that he set. And he felt that although they'd won the cup, they hadn't met those standards that day. And that wasn't good enough. It wasn't good enough for him to win the trophy. They had to win it the way he wanted them to win it. But when you think of when you think of the season that they'd all been through, I mean, these guys, Leighton, Miller and McLeish, over two seasons, through in the international games, played something like 140 games each. Over the two seasons. I mean, they barely missed a game. And the mental strain of everything and going and winning a European trophy and beating Real Madrid and pushing it to the very wire in the league and losing out in the final day by a single point. To then actually even be able to find those reserves to go and win, to go and beat Rangers at Hampden in the Scottish Cup final, took everything that they could give. But they didn't play the sparkling football he wanted.
Finally, in summary, just what did that season mean to you?
It was just incredible. And there was definitely a little bit of disappointment that we hadn't won the league. But even now, and for years afterwards, I would still just think, God, we played Real Madrid in a European final. I look back with nothing but pride on that team. That we had a side like that who were capable of doing that, and for those glorious 12 months in 1983 were unquestionably the best team in Europe.